I hope you can't hear that. It's 8:55 in the morning, therefore things are happening outside. You may hear cars going by. Well, in fact, you probably will hear cars going by, and probably the landscapers taking care of the stupid-ass grass I'm fucking allergic to outside. When really it would be better if they just got rid of the grass entirely, because we live in California. We need drought-resistant foliage. However, the American dream of lush green lawns somehow fucking wins over, you know, what makes sense based on the habitat and environment locally. I was doing a thing. Okay. If you're into Wizarding World meta, you may enjoy this. Hopefully. Maybe. I don't know. There's a thingy that I would like to read to y'all that I wrote about a year ago. Posted it in the Fantastic Beasts subreddit for a split second, but then I got, like, all hella insecure. As I do. And deleted it. As I do. I wanted to examine the relationship between Albus Dumbledore, Credence / Aurelius, and Gellert Grindelwald. Because the storytelling... How do I explain this? Cho uses the symbolism of three, usually people. We see this with Harry, Dumbledore, and Snape. We see this again with the Peverell brothers. I believe very, very firmly that the Albus, Gellert, Credence, Aurelius is the grouping of three for the Fantastic Beasts series. And this sort of character analysis, sort of literary analysis, sort of psychological analysis is going to go into why a bit further. I do have to give a disclaimer, though. One, very long. I don't know how long this is going to take me to read, let alone however long this audio is going to be. I have no fucking way of knowing. I just know that this is very long, and I could cut it down, to be fair, if I could figure out where to divide everything. I'm not sure. All of this shit, I feel, is important. I put, like, a month into working on this alone. So, I mean, when I get into something, I want to understand it from every possible angle. That's just how my brain works. I want to give it a thorough examination. And that's what I've done with this, because I'm just going to start reading, or I'm basically paraphrasing this thing as I am talking about it. I now present to thee Triangulation, an examination of human fantastic beasts and how to exploit them. With Albus representing the Resurrection Stone, Credence, Aurelius as the Elder Wand, and Grindelwald as the Invisibility Cloak. I've chosen Albus as the Resurrection Stone because of everyone he stands to lose the most in this story, I feel. Credence, Aurelius is given the Elder Wand because it is an absurdly powerful tool, which, unfortunately, is exactly how I feel Grindelwald views Credence. And I'm going to interchangeably use Credence or Aurelius in this, just so you know. And as for Grindelwald being the invisibility cloak, so much of what this character does is undercover. Whether covert control and covert manipulation, or just outright hiding in someone else's appearance, as he was with Percival Graves. This is entirely focused on the unfolding Fantastic Beasts series within the Wizarding World. Despite the foreboding title, I'm utterly enamored with this story and can't wait to see how it unfolds, in no small part due to the Dumbledore-Grindelwald relationship dynamic. This, actually, is where I am unable and or unwilling to refrain from wanting to know more. Having been in a long-term relationship with a formally diagnosed narcissist, in parentheses, antisocial personality disorder with psychopathic and narcissistic features, specifically, and having done extensive, frankly, obsessive, research in the aftermath of this experience, I feel my perspective may be beneficial in understanding the dynamics at play within this story, and potentially helpful in figuring out how this story may play out. Warning! Length! I'm wordy. No apologies for that, though I have done my best to edit this down and repeat myself as little as possible. Breaking it into pieces would probably be wise, but I'm not really sure where to split this all, to be totally honest. I tried to be as thorough as possible when cobbling this all together and probably went overboard, to be fair. By all means, take your time, or skip this entirely if you'd prefer. No hard feelings, I assure you. This is a hell of a lot to digest, especially if you're not acquainted with narcissism as a pathology and how these people function interpersonally. I've added sources where necessary, in the original post, to support my theorizing and give further information on subjects the reader may not be aware of, or listener in this case. Folks who enjoy digging through in-depth meta-speculation rather than casual theorizing are probably who this is more geared toward. I'm examining these characters from the perspective of a character analysis, though there is a definite examination of recurring literary themes Jo seems partial to using, as well as dissecting aspects of her own narrative motivations in addition to these character analyses. I felt it important to examine each of these three characters in order to support my theorizing, especially since the symbolism of the three is a storytelling device Jo has established in the wizarding world we know, as echoes of this seem to be bound to exist in the events which came before, too. Too long didn't read. I believe Credence is Aurelius Dumbledore, on Percival's side rather than necessarily Kendra's. Maybe full-blooded if Kendra had sisters and Percival was into those kinds of shenanigans. Things are foggy regarding whether or not Albus knows who he truly is. I lean toward not, partially because Grindelwald stands to hurt Albus so much more if he doesn't know. If you're going for the gut punch, as Jo so often does with her character's most deep-set trauma, Albus not knowing seems to make the most sense. On Credence's mysterious aunt, Kendra Dumbledore, mother to Albus Aberforth and Ariana, died long before Credence Aurelius was born. Her death brought an 18-year-old Albus back home to care for Ariana, you know, which led to him meeting Grindelwald in Godric's Hollow. The 16-year-old Gellert had recently been expelled from Derpstrang and came to live with his great-aunt, Bathilda Bagshot. From there, their relationship began and concluded with Ariana's death, which was a solid 2 years before Credence was born. The timeline for either Kendra being his mother or Ariana's Obscurial latching onto him doesn't quite line up. Maybe Ariana's Obscurial is the same as Credence's, maybe not. I'm not focusing on this aspect at the moment. I feel like this is an intentional misdirect on Jo's behalf. And I can't support exactly why. That's intuitive. I can't come up with a rational argument why. Just, I don't think the Obscurial inside of Credence has anything whatsoever to do with Ariana's. If it has anything to do with Ariana's Obscurial, it's little to nothing. His parentage and the circumstances surrounding his birth are more interesting to me. There's at least one sister to either Percival or Kendra mentioned in canon. That sister doesn't seem like the same woman mentioned in the Crimes of Grindelwald film/screenplay. Mentioned on page 234, as the aunt mentioned in canon has magic. If they were the same person, why not use a bobblehead charm to swim and save the baby, or Accio the blanket the baby was swaddled in, thereby pulling him to her arms and eventual safety? Since this aunt trying to save baby Corvus doesn't seem to have magic and doesn't survive, I highly doubt they are the same person. She's not irrelevant by any means, though, and we'll come back to her potential identity in a moment. The known aunt to Albus lives a long life, it seems, and is named Honoria. No idea what she looked like, none of her features are mentioned at all, and Albus himself only mentions her in passing. there's very little to go on, but since she's mentioned in present terms, way off in Harry's time, I think excluding her as the aunt looking after baby Credence is fair. Not necessarily as being his birth mother, though. I wouldn't entirely excuse Honoria as a possibility for being Aurelius's mother quite yet. But I don't believe she had anything to do with physically taking the baby overseas. More so, Honoria is a witch, so her magic could be tracked. I doubt the Dumbledore family would want a son they seem so intent to hide to be followed so easily. Why send him away, otherwise? This leads me to believe Kendra had an, maybe another, sister, as they both share dark features, which Credence Aurelius also definitely shares. Kendra was muggle-born, so maybe she, the aunt, slash sister, and baby Aurelius were intending to live a quiet life in America, possibly sending him to Ilvermorny if or when he showed magical abilities. It seems like it may have been safer to send him with someone who can't be tracked via magic, though defending the child from magic itself would pose a challenge. But if blood protection played a role somehow, this may not even matter. And this could be where Albus learned of the concept, I suppose. Not necessarily as it was happening, mind you. I'm leaning toward him learning this all in hindsight. Maybe we'll even get to see this realization as his story unfolds in the Fantastic Beasts saga and he becomes the Dumbledore we've known. I hope so. Whether they met on the ship or knew one another beforehand is uncertain. Either way, starting a new life in a new country with an infant takes a fair amount of saving, so she seems to have known Irma. Who was the part goblin handmaiden? Escorting Leda and baby Corvus across the sea. By my estimation, odds seem to indicate the family Aurelius is from was of a middle to higher class. Seems like the Dumbledore family did well enough for themselves, but none of this can be confirmed quite yet. Though the Dumbledore family were disgraced with Percival's alleged anti-Muggle sentiment, it's not like the Lestrange family was entirely on the up-and-up either. Since she's listed as the baby's aunt instead of his mother, she's not his parent. I'm thinking she may be a Muggle, or Squib, sister of Kendra's, possibly taking Aurelius to the States on behalf of both Percival and another sister we may not even know of yet. On the significance of Percival Graves. Grindelwald choosing a man named Percival to impersonate was not unintentional by any means. Who better to act as a surrogate father to Credence than a man with his biological father's first name? It's clear that Grindelwald didn't know exactly who the child he sought was, so maybe he only knew they were a Dumbledore. Keep in mind, the sister he believed to harbor the Obscurus had light hair and blue eyes, similar to the Dumbledore children we know of. He may not have even thought to look for a child with dark features, i.e. a child who looked more like Kendra than Percival. Kendra died before Gellert and Albus met. He'd probably not paid her portrait, assuming she had one, any mind. Overlooking entirely that one side of the Dumbledore family has very light features while the other has very dark features seems plausible. Percival Graves having quite dark features was probably intentional on Joe's behalf, but not necessarily on Grindelwald's. Really, I think the use of the name Percival is the first indication to Credence Aurelius actually being a member of the Dumbledore family. Jo is meticulous with naming her characters, and this seems unlikely to be an accident or coincidence. It's too on the nose, and I don't think this makes any sense as being a stroke of happenstance on Grindelwald's part. It could be part of Grindelwald's heavily layered manipulation, though. The most effective way to deflect from having a lie uncovered is to lie with the truth, establishing plausible deniability. Taking the guise of a man with the same first name as the father of whom both Aurelius and Albus share seems too deliberate to be untrue. This adds another layer of truth entwined within Grindelwald's lies, making the lies seem more convincing. On Albus, Credence Aurelius, and Grindelwald. The name Aurelius translates to Golden One, Gilded One. An archaic definition of the word gilded is to smear with blood. Another is to give a fair and agreeable external appearance to, recommend to favor and reception by superficial decoration, to gild flattery or falsehood. As Grindelwald is a narcissist in terms of pathology, not simply the definition of the word, this lends itself perfectly to Credence being his new golden child. After a brief evaluation, which Grindelwald likely intended to be a final discard, this being the slap and squib, quote-unquote, reveal, which triggered the Obscurial in the first Fantastic Beasts film, Credence has clearly returned to his favor. The next place I inserted links is the Article A, for a rundown of terminology within narcissistic abuse and an explanation of the cycles therein. See Article B for a medical journal article on the pathology of narcissism. See Article C for further information on how and why the mechanism behind the idealization, devaluation, discard cycle reoccurs within narcissistic relationships. Though do keep in mind, the second article shows a very narrow view based only on the psychopathic narcissist, and does not include the slight capacity for emotional investment of the sociopathic narcissist. The psychopathic narcissist is void of authentic empathy, where the sociopathic narcissist has a heavily diminished capacity for empathy, as well as a capacity to care in their own twisted way for a highly select few. Shared experience in early life seems to be a factor with the socio-prefix developing this capacity with someone, be it identical trauma or trauma endured together. They cannot care in an unconditional, healthy, reciprocal, selfless, or genuinely attentive way, but they do show care in their own odd way nevertheless. Grindelwald falls under this umbrella of narcissist, the sociopathic, rather than Voldemort's psychopathic manifestation. This delineation is to say, the sociopathic narcissist's ever so slightly off black to the psychopathic narcissist's Fanta black. Both follow the same basic creed, though this is often unconscious rather than something they're entirely cognizant of. We know Grindelwald wants to use the Obscurus and cannot without its host, so weaponizing Credence however he is able makes sense from his perspective. So is the Aurelius identity itself a total falsehood? Or is what Grindelwald's claiming in terms of Albus's alleged motivation and actions against Credence where the lie lay? I believe the lie lay in the latter. Aurelius is becoming Grindelwald's golden child, where Albus has become the scapegoat after being idealized and devalued as Gellert's former paramour. While Albus is not a child, it seems relevant with the appearance of he and Aurelius being brothers to include the golden child scapegoat dynamic within this analysis. The relationship dynamic between these two within the narcissistic realm illustrates where I think their relationship is headed. Grindelwald's audacity is staggering. Though Albus was older than himself by 2 years, Albus was viewed as subordinate to Gellert, likely as a means of Grindelwald's compulsion to subjugate. Especially with the implosion of their relationship, if I'm not mistaken in what I've inferred. Gellert lashed out after not getting precisely what he wanted when he wanted it, leading Albus to refuse continuing their relationship and their plans to bring their then-shared ideology to fruition. Albus rejected him, not the other way around. This would not sit well with Gellert at all. A want for vengeance, and for the negative fuel this vengeance would supply, seemed like his long-term goal, as well as enforcing the inception of the world he and Albus envisioned together, which would give him more spiteful fuel, knowing full well that Albus came to his senses and now rejects this ideal entirely. The phrase, for the greater good, was Albus's own idea. Don't forget. Using this phrase, knowing Albus now realizes the reality of Grindelwald's depravity is fuel too. Do keep in mind his attitude, spouting the play by the rules, children, line in Père Lachaise. He doesn't view anyone as on his level, not at his stature, nor near his omnipotence and obvious magical, intellectual, and psychosocial prowess. I disagree wholeheartedly with those who believe Grindelwald views Albus as an equal. Rather, I feel he viewed Albus as very nearly equal, thus only slightly subservient. No one could quite mirror to his own magnificence, though Albus may have come close, and I believe Grindelwald is now determined to punish Albus for Gellert's own mistaken perception. He's hurt. Albus aggravated the narcissistic wound at Gellert's foundation by rejecting his ideology and desire, forsaking their relationship entirely, and refusing Gellert's need for utter control. For the record, I'm willing to bet a core facet of this wound is abandonment. There's too much we don't know about his parentage. And things like narcissism, antisocial personality disorder, any cluster B disorder, really, they all begin in early development. These are the kinds of things your earliest experience influences heavily. Not always, but often. Particularly with the sociopathic narcissist. The psychopath can be born, the sociopath is more often made. Albus may have been included in his hierarchy, but I doubt Gellert ever truly saw him as an equal. Rather, Gellert viewed him with a sense of admiration and jealousy for the slightly older and brilliant boy Albus already was, and as an asset to achieve his vision for the world, as well as an appliance for high-grade fuel. This loss, to Gellert, was massive. Not that he'd be likely to admit this. Showing vulnerability is unthinkable to the narcissist. With Grindelwald taking on a parental role to Credence now, I feel the golden child scapegoat dynamic is particularly apt and far too important to simply dismiss without careful examination. I mean, Albus certainly was Gellert's primary source during their relationship, but this of course shifted into a discard, which seems unwilling from Grindelwald's perspective, as Albus chose the remains of his family over Gellert himself. And Albus's eventual devaluation. Credence seems to be his current primary source, though these classifications both apply in addition to the golden child's scapegoat dynamic, I have to add. His inner circle of followers, Vinda, Abernathy, Queenie, etc., seem like secondary sources, while the rest of his followers are tertiary sources. Again, I'm inclined to believe that Credence is a Dumbledore. Too many little things line up for this not to be true, I feel. His birth father's name being used as a guise by a surrogate father is icing on the cake. The Phoenix, too, although to be fair, this could be a fabrication on Grindelwald's behalf. We really can't know exactly how the Phoenix came to Aurelius quite yet. He was in deep distress, certainly, and had a desperate need for sure, which lines up with what Albus has said of their family legend. Grindelwald clearly knows of this legend too, informing Aurelius of this right before divulging the truth of his identity. Why mention this at all, from Joe's perspective as a storyteller, if this isn't relevant? Let's tree branch onto the subject of Albus for a moment. On the character's level, I think Albus mentioning the Phoenix legend to Newt was him offering Newt a rare glimpse into the truth of who Albus himself is. It seems too casual to be a particularly calculated move on Albus's behalf. What would Newt gain from knowing this, aside from a tiny glimpse into who Albus himself is? A glimpse of which Newt, of course, totally misses as a signal of Albus's ease around him, as Newt is too consumed by his own discomfort in that moment. Albus has little to gain by telling Newt this, though by not being as straightforward and transparent as Albus can be in the moment, he stands to lose Newt's loyalty as well as his help. This help Albus needs, so, showing flashes of himself for who he is rather than only the enigmatic aura he radiates is necessary, even if it seems out of place and like an extraneous, unrelated detail to Newt. I doubt this is an unrelated detail at all, though neither character may realize this. From a storytelling point of view, why is this line necessary? It's such a casual moment that Albus mentions it almost in passing. At first glance, it can seem like a simple nod to the series we're familiar with, a a nod to Fox, as well as Fox taking flight after Albus does die, never to return again. I'm sure on a level it is this, but not only on this level. I think this line serves a purpose beyond simple fan service. This seems like indirect confirmation of Credence truly being Aurelius to me. A clue, innocuous enough to seem irrelevant to the characters while being deliberate on the storyteller's behalf. Soon after this line, Albus seems to believe they're either being followed or overheard somehow, so he and Newt apparate to a different location to continue their conversation. Whether they were being followed or Albus was simply covering their tracks just to be safe, I can't be certain. It's likely they were being followed, with the Ministry keeping tabs on Albus at every opportunity. I don't doubt he's followed everywhere he goes at this point in time. I also don't doubt that Grindelwald has multiple sources within the Ministry itself reporting information to him, so it seems unlikely that at least one source isn't tied to monitoring Albus's whereabouts and actions. So, this could be where Grindelwald heard the legend. However, what I also do not doubt is that younger Albus likely mentioned this legend to the boy he fell in love with so long ago, who grew into the antagonist we're becoming acquainted with now. Why wouldn't he, really? Sharing your hopes and dreams, both ancestral rights and slights, your sorrows and your greatest accomplishments, is part of falling in such an all-consuming love as that which Joe has said Albus and Gellert shared, especially with your first taste of love as a very young adult. Immersion into the other person's world serves to merge your respective worlds into one. The depth and breadth of the love they've shared, as Joe has stated, seems to match this line of thought perfectly. It'd seem inconsequential enough for him to share this information, and also a point of pride Albus seems to have in his lineage. And why wouldn't he? With his father being imprisoned for attacking Muggle children, his mother now dead, and responsibility for both his younger brother and mentally ill little sister with volatile and violent magical outbursts, falling to Albus's still teenage shoulders, finding whatever good he could through his bloodline seems especially important to not harbor an enduring resentment for his lineage. This immersion was, for Albus, out of real love. For Gellert, this was to solidify his place in Albus's life and sink his claws in with the intent of being the only person in the relationship who can appear to let go. This is love as Gellert understands both the concept and its function. Returning to Credence Aurelius. Grindelwald's telling of this legend could be a red herring intended to mislead us, sure, but why? And why have both Albus and Grindelwald both mentioned the same legend? To sow doubt. To give the audience the same confused feeling Credence has about his own identity. Joe doesn't often deliberately mislead her audience or her characters, least of all without a compelling reason to do so. This, to me, seems like another way to give the audience a sense of empathy with him. Why then do we need that empathy? I think that the vendetta Grindelwald is implanting and nurturing in him against Albus is the reason. Albus is a beloved character. Opposition to him often vilifies the character opposing him. We need to feel for Aurelius. We, the audience, need to hurt for both he and Albus, but mostly for Aurelius. He's at the crux of whatever is to come. It would be so easy for the audience to hate him, and in fact, audiences already have started to. On an emotional level, he's both volatile and frail, so overwhelmingly traumatized and reacting to everything he encounters through the lens of a young man with CPTSD. The phrase, "boys don't cry," comes to mind, in particular. Yet Credence does, in every film so far. This perceived weakness is a vulnerability the audience does not often see portrayed quite this way in a young male character. This intense and hyperreactive vulnerability is exactly why Grindelwald exploits him so easily. Aurelius is a victim here, and this has to be crystal clear to the audience in the films to come, whether he can be saved or not. His victimhood in this mess has to be obvious, especially as he faces Albus. Because Albus automatically has a huge pull with the audience. He's an established and deeply beloved character. It'd be easy to despise and dehumanize any opposition to him. It's a knee-jerk reaction, really, and a very easy line of thought to follow and believe. But this is an intricate and delicately nuanced situation. Nothing is as simple as it seems. This adds another insidious layer to Grindelwald too, of course. How hurt he must have been by he and Albus's separation. Seeking elaborate revenge in the same damn vein as the initial implosion that led to their breakup and killed Ariana, adding more insult to more injury. There's a profound pain in Grindelwald, too. But he's not a victim in any of this. No matter how he may feel he is, though I doubt he'd let his hyper-self-controlled mask slip so far as to admit this to anyone. He is the perpetrator. No doubt. Bringing war upon the world in no small part to get back at your ex who literally cannot fight you is an excessively elaborate method of seeking vengeance. Lying with the truth is so much more insidious, not to mention seems more Grindelwald's style than outright deception appears to be. His manipulation of Aurelius, in particular, is intricately layered. Manipulation is an art to Grindelwald, and Aurelius seems to be his masterpiece. Revisiting Percival, Dumbledore. I think Aurelius is a Dumbledore through Percival, not through Kendra. She was already dead by the time Aurelius was born. Though the physical similarities may not be irrelevant, since Kendra had dark features too. Maybe Percival Dumbledore had a type that seems plausible. Again, I'm wondering if Kendra had sisters. Maybe Percival had an ongoing affair with one of her sisters while they were married, and maybe this started after her death. Either way, and whether or not he's got the same blood from both parents rather than another woman, Aurelius seems to have been conceived in Azkaban. If Percival is his father, as he was the only parent to the Dumbledore children alive at the time, I see no other option. There doesn't seem to be anywhere else for Aurelius's conception to occur. Imagine the effect this could have on a fetus, being surrounded by Dementors and their unrelenting misery. From the second that person to be begins life on a cellular level. We already know a love spell hindered Tom Riddle from ever being able to experience love. I'm thinking the influence of Dementors plays a role in Aurelius Credence's inability to find happiness. Why everything around him seems to go wrong in the worst ways. An example of this is seen in the ship itself sinking, Corvus dying in his place, possibly Corvus is crying as well, which led to Leda's frustration and decision to switch the babies, inadvertently killing Corvus, which perpetuated her own lifelong guilt and misery. This enduring and residual Dementor influence could be why he seems to have the effect of making others feel so down just by being near them. Which is something people with CPTSD often endure as well. Not on a magical level like Credence Corvus, but there are real-world parallels here. This could also be why he's like a magnet for mistreatment, and why he's so starved for love and affection. why the Obscurus has taken such a deep hold on him, yet he is able to sustain it and survive. Not thrive, but survive. This propensity for the bleakest and darkest a person can feel is innate to him. He can't escape. It is always in him as his constant companion. A dark passenger, if you will. Please know. Please know that I truly hate the victim-blaming shit I am about to say. None of this means Aurelius deserves any of the abhorrent treatment he's endured. Not at all. Rather, I feel this mistreatment may have been entirely unavoidable for him. In real life, this is avoidable. But we're talking about magic here, not reality. I would not be surprised if this inborn dark magic unwittingly inspires an abusive or violent reaction in others. That he actually is a magnet for mistreatment. Why Miss Barebone singled him out for abuse in particular, valuing him well below every other child in her alleged care. Why Grindelwald and Graves' meat suit lost his patience with Credence, hence the slap and verbal abuse that followed. He didn't know Credence was the Obscurus all along at the time. This would therefore be why Grindelwald needs Queenie to gain an empathic insight into Aurelius' emotional state. She's essentially his sensitivity meter. In Whovian terms, as the 12th Doctor regards Clara, she's his carer, because he can't actually care. She cares so I don't have to. Likely because Grindelwald can't care in any genuine or truly attentive way. Grindelwald may not be as in control of himself as he'd like to be with Aurelius. Think of the effect like being around a human horcrux. It pulls the worst in you to the forefront, and containment requires immense self-control, which isn't possible for anyone to maintain 100% of the time. The worst in Grindelwald is an obscenely controlling, cruel, opportunistic, and remorseless beast. Still a man, though certainly a magic-bearing person, but beastly nevertheless, which could be part of why Albus refrains from fetching Aurelius himself, assuming he knows who Credence really is. It may be outright dangerous for Albus to be near Aurelius. Keeping his own impulse to mismanage power at bay would be beyond simply difficult if Albus were to take Aurelius in, especially if Aurelius can only be freed of this dark passenger in death. Now, I'm not convinced Albus knows who Credence is, but this is a compelling possibility all the same. Though I'm not entirely convinced this dark passenger wouldn't be able to pull a reactive compulsion to try and save him out of Albus, either. The dark passenger could be why Tina lost her cool and attacked Miss Barebone. This seems like a dualistic response to the abusive impulses of Miss Barebone and Grindelwald, with Tina and Nagini taking their firm stance against this abuse in his defense. Tina and Nagini both only want to help him, to offer him the love, affection, and protection he's been deprived of. Their impulse is to protect him from harm, in direct opposition to the impulse Miss Barebone and Grindelwald feel to abuse him. Tina was simply defending Credence from enduring more abuse. Nagini has made every effort to comfort and nurture Credence, for them to find their freedom together, ensuring that both of them are safe and free at last. It seems to me like his dark passenger, if this is what he has, both compels others to cause him harm and to defend him at their own expense. Perhaps Albus is aware of this. Perhaps not. If my theory on the Dementor's influence is correct, Aurelius is biochemically and magically built to sustain deep misery and true, relentless, and unyielding sorrow. his victimization is compounded. Instilling empathy in the audience is vital for the audience to understand him, as well as to understand the breadth of Grindelwald's malice. Grindelwald is outright weaponizing Aurelius's misery. There's no doubt about this. How deep does that misery lay, though? And just how strong is this weapon? I'd think Aurelius is, at minimum, both his fat man and little boy, which, of course, left Hiroshima and Nagasaki utterly devastated. Grindelwald's already tried to level Paris. I wouldn't be surprised if there are ample literary parallels between the most devastating aspects of World War II and the havoc wrought by Grindelwald and his followers. I think we're all expecting the Fantastic Beasts series to get darker and darker as the story progresses. Especially because this is a fully realized adult view of war instead of the young adult perspective we had in the Harry Potter series. War on a scale we've never seen before in the Wizarding World is imminent, paralleling and entwining with the history our nomad reality has wrought and sustained on Albus. I really don't believe Albus knows Credence's true identity, at least not yet. Sure, he's an incredibly manipulative man and is probably capable of keeping this secret. And yes, he cannot actually fight Grindelwald at this point in the series. But could he refrain from making every effort to save the only sibling he has left? If my dark passenger theory is correct, I really don't think Albus could restrain himself, at least if he were physically near Aurelius. Aurelius would unwittingly pluck the urge to protect him right from Albus's expertly hidden heartstrings. Aberforth and Albus already have a deeply fractured relationship, so Albus keeping his distance may seem like a more compassionate choice to him. Aberforth is bitter and angry with damn good reason. Albus can't change his mind or feelings, not after abandoning both Aberforth and Ariana, with this abandonment eventually leading to Ariana's death. Especially at Albus's utterly toxic ex's hand. Whether he or Gellert cast the spell which killed Ariana is largely irrelevant. Albus was warned not to continue their relationship outright by Aberforth. Albus didn't listen. Aberforth was fortunate to only be subjected to the Cruciatus curse at Gellert's hand. But he and Ariana both were collateral damage for Albus's refusal to see the truth. The relationship between he and Aberforth probably seems unsalvageable to Albus, and it may genuinely be. So they stay away from each other.
Hi, y'all. This is ADR Rescue. I completely skipped this entire fucking paragraph, so I'm going to insert it now. I'm sorry if the quality is different. Bye. Thank you for listening anyway. Albus has one more chance to be the brother he could have been, but wasn't, to his known siblings. That chance is with Aurelius. Yes, Albus is being watched and heavily monitored by the Ministry. I don't doubt he could break free of this surveillance and dodge all eyes he doesn't want to be seen by with the right motivation. His power, the scope of his magic, is prodigal. His brilliance is beyond what anyone around him can predict. Hence the heavy, and probably constant, surveillance on behalf of the Ministry. Albus is where he wants to be, at Hogwarts. It's his sanctuary, just like it was for Harry, too. Yes, abandoning his career would be immensely selfish and unwise. Albus is entirely capable of that kind of selfishness. He just needs the right motivation. Gellert was that selfish motivation, for a while. Maybe keeping his distance from Aberforth is more selfish than selfless, too.
Could Albus refrain from moving every mountain between himself and Aurelius if he knows who Aurelius truly is? I don't know if he could. His abuse of power for the sake of love terrifies him, yes, but could he hold this drive back to save the only sibling he has any vague chance of having a relationship with? Of saving. This is his last chance to salvage or forge some kind of relationship with a sibling. To keep them safe, to protect them from his own self-indulgent and ultimately selfish past. To give Aurelius the love he so desperately needs, whether Aurelius can accept or reciprocate that love or not, and whether Albus can free him of the Obscurial or not. This is Albus's last chance to show his own sibling attentive care and affection. Albus is clearly capable of nurturing his students, though this is an interaction with clearly defined boundaries. So maybe this is his blind spot. Showing affection and attentive care to those who he holds most dear. A certain distance or reservation seems to be an integral aspect of his comfort zone, as evidenced in his relationship with Harry and his known relationship with Aberforth. A much closer tie was forged with Gellert, but that may have been a mistake Albus was too afraid to repeat without knowing the other person was utterly benign. That seems like the tragedy of his character, to me. On the other hand, if Albus does know who Credence really is, and also knows the circumstances that brought him into the world, keeping his distance may seem wise. Maybe he does know the full truth, and this is why he can't fetch the boy himself. I'm not quite convinced either way. Not fully. If he knows Aurelius is incapable of truly experiencing love, though, leaving him vulnerable to Grindelwald's manipulation seems extra unwise, especially if Albus knows of the Dark Passenger enabling the Obscurial to endure well beyond the life expectancy of anyone who's been afflicted with one before. The capacity to harbor such pure and concentrated agony, in addition to the Obscurus he also carries, makes Credence incredibly dangerous. Leaving him with even the vague possibility of becoming indoctrinated as Grindelwald's marionette is a grandiose error in judgment if Albus does know who he is. This doesn't seem like something Albus is capable of to me. I'm not talking about the error in judgment, I'm talking about the sheer callousness of this. Yes, he's capable of leading literal children like lambs to slaughter further on in the series, as he blatantly does with Harry. This isn't that Dumbledore, at least not yet. The Fantastic Beasts story is how he becomes that Dumbledore. Could this young version of Albus live with showing his last extant sibling such a lack of care? He has one last shot to change this pattern of letting each and every one of his siblings down. Just one. Could he throw that last shot away? Aurelius seems like a key weakness to Albus either way, whether he knows who Credence is or not. Returning to the three. I hesitate to speculate on how Albus, Aurelius, and Gellert will respond when facing one another, but I'm going to anyhow. Most of this hesitation is because I'm afraid Albus may have no option but to feel or be responsible for his death, similar to Ariana's, but perhaps not an exact mirror to her death. Not necessarily in an overt way. By which I mean not as in Albus using an unforgivable curse directly on him, or even necessarily as a curse deflected to him, although this is entirely possible, obviously. Rather, I can see this happening as an indirect consequence of containing Aurelius's inevitable outburst. Trapping an atom bomb as it detonates, Aurelius, in a force field, like the one created around Père Lachaise, seems most likely to me. To spare many, many others, I fear Albus will have no option but to sacrifice Aurelius. Possibly immediately after learning that they're brothers. Again, going for the gut punch. Him refusing to fight offensively with Aurelius could lead to a deflected curse in the inevitable duel between Albus and Grindelwald. A duel which ends Aurelius's life, to parallel Ariana's death, though perhaps not quite in the same way. I think this is likely, but it may not be the full story. Another three-way duel seems probable, perhaps with Gellert attacking Aurelius in front of Albus, proverbially stabbing Aurelius, another Dumbledore, in the back, as the first Dumbledore brother whose allegiance Gellert lost has no option but to watch. This seems sufficiently cruel enough to fit Grindelwald's motivation. I think this duel will begin with Gellert deflecting a curse from hitting himself to hitting Aurelius. Aurelius is excessively volatile. His dark passenger gives his Obscurus a power-up of sorts. A deflected curse seems more likely to anger Aurelius, not outright kill him. Although I doubt Albus would even try to use Avada Kedavra. How could he, after Ariana's death in the same damn context? Something non-lethal seems most likely. Would Aurelius have the self-control to care which person is responsible for the curse being directed his way? I doubt so. Grindelwald indirectly igniting the Obscurial's rage and thereby forcing a confrontation between the brothers seems most likely to me. This also gives him a semblance of plausible deniability with credence. He could evade responsibility with his silver-tongued wile with minimal effort. Grindelwald could easily fuel the rage he's nurturing in Aurelius against Albus in that moment. Remember, to smear with blood. To gild Aurelius and make him much more than only an accomplice in Grindelwald's own endgame. To ensure Aurelius Dumbledore's hands are coated in blood as he craved Albus's own to be. Albus refused to be complicit in Grindelwald's war crimes. Aurelius is the next best option to force the Dumbledore line into active participation in Grindelwald's war for the greater good. Aurelius is already beastly, with the Dark Passenger's Obscurial void swirling within him. Grindelwald simply aims to nurture and redirect the beast to weaponize him against Albus specifically, out of spite. This satiates Grindelwald with the highest quality fuel he can drain from this triangulation. Directing a curse from Albus to Aurelius to begin this fight, I feel, is the perfect beginning. The exact move that killed Ariana, being used again, offensively against Albus and his family again. That's going to drive Grindelwald's proverbial knife deeper into Albus's heart. Who would Aurelius believe in that moment? The man who's taken him in and given him his name back, or the brother he's been so expertly manipulated and indoctrinated into hating based on the lies he's been fed? I really doubt this matters too much. Both would be intense sources of agony for Aurelius. As long as they both burn too, nothing else matters. But neither of them will. We know they both survive. So another sibling is lost to Albus, and another tragedy befalls the Dumbledore family, which is currently a very, very small family. Jo says not to believe everything we're told at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald. I'm thinking this is an indication of Albus not knowing who Credence is, that through Grindelwald lying with the truth, the two being brothers, he is covering for Albus truly not knowing he even has another brother, much less that he's got any sort of vendetta against Aurelius at all. Grindelwald's lies are entwined with truths, you see, which makes differentiating between the two so difficult. And this is certainly intentional on Grindelwald's behalf. A lie is so much easier to believe and to sell when there's truth layered within it. Aurelius, I believe, is simply collateral damage, intended to hurt Albus above all else. Just as Aberforth and Ariana were. On Gellert. Gellert is unequivocally stated to be a narcissist, not merely in terms of behavior or seeming self-obsessed. This is a pathology irrevocably entwined with the foundation of who he himself is, who he has become in response to whatever his earliest experiences were. Joe has also stated that he is a sociopath rather than a psychopath. Being responsible for Albus losing another sibling seems like high-grade fuel to satiate him. Gellert's manipulation of Aurelius is what he really feeds off of here. Transplanting his own corrosive and lecherous desire for revenge into Aurelius, forging Aurelius into his favorite weapon to checkmate his greatest opponent. Albus is a brilliant wizard, for certain. But he holds more value to Gellert than his prowess alone contains. Gellert loved him. His love is undoubtedly a twisted and noxious parody of truly reciprocal and unconditional love as most of us understand love to be. But it was love, as Gellert understands and feels this emotion. This gives Albus a certain power over him that I doubt anyone else has had or will ever have again. Admitting Albus has any modicum of power over him at all is likely horrifying to him. This, I think, is why he eventually admits to fearing Albus. Nobody else can hurt him on such a visceral level. No one else has the magical prowess, the insight to Gellert's psyche, and, most crucial of all, direct access to his petrified heart. Nobody else is worthy of this macabre honor but Albus. Gellert can't have this. No. This leaves him vulnerable for a change. Especially once he realizes the blood pact protecting him from Albus is gone and that it can and will be broken. Nurturing a thirst for vengeance in Aurelius in order to force a confrontation between the two brothers is apparent to me as Grindelwald's personal endgame. His vendetta against Albus lay simmering just barely beneath the surface of this war he's hell-bent on bringing from the fantasy of their youth into full realization. Grindelwald is essentially saying, "Look how I can twist the knife I've left in your chest again and again, my shock and odd long-lost love." Oh, the cleverness of me. Exploiting the weakness in you. Just like old times. You really thought you could escape, didn't you? Aurelius is like an armed nuke left to deteriorate in hostile conditions. With the right or wrong use of force, he's bound to obliterate himself and everything around him entirely. Gellert probably knows this and is counting on it. All to bring enforced subjugation upon all who are not on his level. Which consists of only himself, naturally. Albus had an opportunity to be only slightly inferior rather than wholly subjugated, but came to his senses and paid a steep price for this lapse in judgment. I'm leaning toward the Obscurus finally becoming too much for Aurelius to sustain any longer during the confrontation with Albus. Not anyone actually murdering him, rather. Self-immolation without the Phoenician immortality to birth him again from the ashes of this crematory obliteration. I think this is where Grindelwald intends to lead him. As a pig to slaughter before his inevitable demise. Grindelwald just has to ensure he detonates at the right time, under the right circumstances. and with the right audience to witness his grotesque masterpiece. I think this is an identical parallel to what we know Albus Dumbledore does with Harry. Of course, they're doing it for very, very different reasons, but at the same time, they are similar to win a war. Don't forget, later on in the series, Albus is very, very cold, and quite cruel and manipulative with Harry, even. On one hand, some of this is to ensure Harry doesn't get overly attached to Albus. However, I don't doubt that a great deal of this is so that Albus himself doesn't start to feel attached to Harry more than he already does anyhow. Maybe this is a parallel to Credence. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. Again, this is all theorizing. I mean, I'm not claiming any of this as absolute fact. It's meta-speculation, really, but I do think that this is very, very likely. I do think this is very, very likely where the Fantastic Beasts series is headed as far as it concerns these three characters. I know I haven't given concrete proof why I think Credence is Aurelius. This article is really more running on the assumption that he already is and figuring out exactly how he could be. Because it is so much more insidious for Grindelwald to lie with the truth. For Aurelius, or Credence, for him to actually be Aurelius, from a narrative sense, it makes too much sense to me to not be true. The story I've always been fascinated with is the Dumbledore-Grindelwald relationship. I mean, ever since it was mentioned in, what, Half-Blood Prince? Was it Half-Blood Prince or, Order of the Phoenix? I don't remember which. It's been so long since I've read the books. Fuck. Ever since we see those first little flashbacks, and we hear what happened from Aberforth, I've been fascinated by this relationship, and for a long time I didn't know why. Until I was in a relationship with someone very similar to Grindelwald myself. And then, looking at this story, on one hand, has become a bit of an obsession for me. Then again, so has researching the pathology of both antisocial personality disorder and narcissism. And in this article, I failed to mention that, this may sound insane, but not all sociopaths and psychopaths are bad people, guys. There genuinely are some, I would dare say the majority, who actually are good and are benign. As always, it is the extremist, most vocal few that are the problem. Again, this is all speculation. If anybody has actually listened to this and would like to speculate with me, feel free. I'm 100% here for Fantastic Beasts speculation. What the fuck else are we all gonna do, really? Especially since the third movie's been delayed because of the stupid fucking virus. God damn it. Anywho. If you've listened this far, thank you. And please, let me know what you're thinking. I genuinely want to know. That was unnecessary, but I felt like it. I wish I had a kazoo. I want to play this on the kazoo. Damn it! I need a kazoo. Pretend I'm playing Hedwig's theme on the kazoo, please. Thanks. Okay, we're gonna stop recording. Bye. Wow.